This is Primetime on KTEP, a program that focuses on economic development, mobility, security, and quality of life issues in El Paso and surrounding areas.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of El Paso Primetime. And on this Saturday afternoon, we have with us a gentleman who has a lot of information to share with you, our citizens, our taxpayers, our voters. We have the Honorable Ricardo Samaniego, our county judge for the county of El Paso. Judge, thank you for coming on the show with us today.
Thank you. I always hear your show, so I'm excited to be now on this other side instead of listening to it as I drive.
You're a very busy man, and you guys keep a crazy schedule. So I'm thrilled to have you on the show today because we have so much to share with our community in terms of what's happening in the county. And I think a lot of positive things, but I'll leave that to the judgment of the listeners after they hear what you have to share with us.
Before we
get too deep into the really critical issues that we want to talk about, for the benefit of our listening audience, some of whom may pay attention to what's going on at the county and some may not, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a very brief background on, first of all, your private sector experience prior to serving as the county judge.
Well, thank you for that. And, some people are actually confused about what a county judge does. And so it's a little bit of a misnomer to say county judge. You know, people will say, hey, if I get a ticket, will you fix it for me? And I said, no, that's not mine. I'm not a judicial judge. I am actually the CEO of the county of El Paso. And during any emergency, I take on the lead. I'm the lead politician or lead elected official. As you saw in the pandemic, as you saw in the Walmart shooting. It's just a little bit that I want to talk about is the fact that I'm barely trying to get into economic development, but I became more of a crisis management. You know, the very first month that I was in around March, we had the killing of a deputy, which was very difficult. I worked with a family. We had the first, immigration crisis at that point. Then we had the Walmart shooting, then we had the pandemic, and then once again we had the crisis again. So a lot of crisis management versus some of the things that I wanted to do because of my background.
As we get into this conversation, including economic development, because we just had Mayor Johnson on just the other day, I think a week or so ago, he was on the show with us, and his number one priority, as I think you know as well, it wasn't just rhetoric when he was running for office, is economic development.
Absolutely.
So we want to talk about the opportunities that we have before us. You as our county judge and he as our new mayor to be able to collaborate with each other. But I don't want to take away, steal your thunder as the phrase goes. So let's get right into the key elements that we want to talk about today. And since you mentioned economic development, let's start with that and then we can move on to other issues.
Absolutely.
Please.
Well, we have three pillars that are very important to us. It's manufacturing, it's healthcare, and those two are extremely important because they sort of focus on what we already have. And then, of course, aerospace is something we really want to get into. I just came from being able to get a tour there at the Advanced Manufacturing. This is going to be one of the most incredible hubs. We had individuals from Blue Origin, individuals from Raytheon. And so we've become
Lockheed Martin was
Lockheed
there too.
Lockheed Mark. I mean, it's become where we've got, Blue Origin on one side, Galactic on the other side, and we're right at this corridor to create an aerospace. So that one's sort of more futuristic of things that we want to do. But if you look at healthcare, we already have a tremendous foundation in the Medical Center of the Americas. We have Texas Tech. We have all of these things going for us. And one of the things that's very difficult is to see people come through here, go to Phoenix, go to Dallas, Houston to get healthcare. And that obviously we want to maintain that. And we're a beacon for a lot of individuals. Being a level one trauma center is extremely important. And so you've got, you know, it's a regional thing. You'd have to go to Albuquerque or you'd have to go to Lubbock to be able to receive that kind of attention. And so we're a beacon not only for us but for this whole region. Mexico, obviously, Juarez depends a lot on us. So I look forward to that. We just came out of strategic planning. We were there for 2 days. And another one came up, and it's one that's very important that you all know about, but we haven't really focused on it, and that's agriculture. You know, unfortunately, we sort of let agriculture sort of fend for themselves. I mean, if you think about it, we haven't given them incentives. We haven't really focused on them yet. You know, they're some of the biggest pecan producers. They're getting into tea, into some of these things could be very valuable for us. And so that's something that we brought up to say we have three pillars, but I'm not sure if we can begin to look at agriculture as very important.
It's an interesting point that you raise because I think we've all seen it as we drive around the community, particularly out in the county outside the city. Whether it's west or east, you see a lot of what used to be former agricultural facilities, ranches, farms, who the owners of those, or maybe the heirs of the original owners, have sold off the property for commercial development, whether that's residential or manufacturing facilities. So it's interesting that this is coming back full circle now.
Absolutely. And remember, we've got one big project that's going to be very valuable to the county is a Tornillo port of entry. We spent almost $80 million and unfortunately became a white elephant. We're having like 3-4 trucks coming through. But now as an option, anybody coming from Mexico headed, for example, they're headed to Florida, they're headed to Dallas. It's a perfect, you know, way to come through. We move so much, probably more than any port, but this is going to be a great option. There's discussions about BOTA. If you've heard, you know, there's almost $700 million was given to us to modernize the Bridge of the Americas. If that happens, you're looking at construction for almost 2 to 3 years. And so we don't want things to stop. We don't want people to choose other port of entries simply. And we're in a very cooperative. We're going to cooperate tremendously with Santa Teresa. So if you've got trade coming in headed to Los Angeles, we're glad that Santa Teresa can take it. The problem we had before, Richard, is that we looked at each one individual. So
two mistake.
Two owned by the city. One owned by the federal government, and then we owned Tornillo. And so we had five different systems going. And now we've realized that being the gateway from Mexico to the United States is probably going to be one of the most incredible things that can happen. It'll be transformational. I mean, this will be something great. I know we talk about tariffs, but individuals are also looking. You know, I went to Taiwan, and I spent almost 7 days looking at companies that want to come to El Paso, and they want to come into the United States so they don't have to deal with the tariffs, you know, because they have to, even if they're reduced, they don't like the uncertainty that they could change. So there's going to be a lot of manufacturing that's going to take place. You know, of all the companies that are coming in or talking or wanting to come into El Paso, 80% of them, Richard, are in manufacturing here in El Paso. So we have become very attractive. I know that in Taiwan, I mean, they couldn't wait to. I mean, we had 15 companies that wanted to talk to us because manufacturing is positioned tremendously well here on the border. I'll give you an example. Their executives, like in my case, I worked for the Maquiladora. We could come back and forth. So I would come here to El Paso to the operations, go back to Mexico. And so you're not duplicating executives. So certain executives can actually be in Mexico, be in the United States, and that's very efficient for them. And they love that ability of an executive, an American executive, being able to go to Juarez and then work with a manufacturing facility. So we have a lot to offer.
By way of background, just to share with our audience, because of my career, my previous careers, you know, I used to own a fairly large travel company, and really I grew it to a large company along with my partner at the time by working with the Maquiladoras, because there still are so many. There's nearly 400 in the region, and these executives love it. You're right.
Absolutely.
Because they live on this side of the border. They work on that side of the border. They have all the benefits of the lifestyle in El Paso. And of course, from the economic perspective, we also can't overlook that we have the foreign trade zone.
Absolutely.
Which is a great area for these companies to have presence and benefit financially to help continue to grow our economy. People don't notice it.
Yeah.
It's so large, so vast. It's out by the airport, off of Airport and Airway Boulevard. It's,
I'll give you a statistic that I should have known. I was embarrassed that we have 3,000 Taiwanese living in El Paso.
It's incredible.
Isn't that amazing? And
it is.
And they have businesses in Juarez, and they have over 35,000 to 40,000 employees. And they love El Paso, and they've told people about us. That's why I ended up going to Taiwan, because they just want to be part of our community. And so that's an exceptional thing that you yourself, from being at the chamber and running the chamber, those were seeds. I mean, it's taken a long time to be where we are. Now we have to cultivate, the infrastructure, and we'll talk a little bit of when we talk about infrastructure, you'll see why it's so important.
Yeah, I want to get to those in just a second so we don't run out of time, because it's important. But one thing I wanted to touch on, and I touched on it with the mayor as well, is we have what's known as the Chapter 380, Chapter 381. 381 is for the county, 380 is for the city. And these relate to the state and their economic development incentive programs. But I understand, and I don't know what you can speak to it about, but hopefully you can share a little bit, that there's an effort being put forth, a collaborative effort between the city and the county, to pull together one economic development incentive package program so that we're not dealing with multiples. Can you speak to that?
Yes, we actually have someone helping us put that together between the city and the county, because sometimes you have differences. For example, we are very, very strong on wages. We want to make sure that no company that comes here to El Paso is under the minimum county wage. And we're already at about $15.75 at this point. And so they might be looking more at the capital investment. And they say, well, the wages can catch up. And so when you have difference of philosophy, it's difficult when you're trying to talk to somebody, because it's one of the things that you'll know, Richard, more than anybody, one face to the customer. The customer doesn't want to hear that, now I got to go to the city, now I got to go to the county, and we have difference of opinion, and some things happened. And I think with the relationship I have with the mayor, I think it's going to be very valuable to be able to sit down and have one policy and be able to say, this is what we can offer you. The other thing that we're going to improve is sometimes we allow the process when we know that we're not going to be accepting that. And so they go through all this ordeal. And then we tell them, no, your minimum wage is too low. And they're going, well, why didn't you tell me that earlier? And we don't want to discourage business. Right now, if there's anything that's changed that maybe 20 years ago we didn't have, was we were not very encouraging about businesses. We didn't have that openness, that kind of. Now you've got people like, Schneider Electric. They come in, and this is where I want to thank the audience. We have one of the most incredible workforces, and people don't realize that. When we have a grand opening, I turn around and I look to the employees and I said, remember, the reason we can expand is because of the way you work. And the day you don't have that work ethic, that dedication, we lose a huge opportunity to bring companies. They love our mountains, they love all these things, but they always tell us, I can't believe your people, how they work, how the work ethic, their dedication and loyalty. That's unusual. And now my job has been, I don't want to lose that. That's something we sell to the world, and I want to cultivate it. And the way we cultivate it is by you giving me an opportunity here to talk about the parents doing the same things that they did for myself, the values, the way we look at the world, the dedication that we have. We have to teach that to our children, because if that dies, I can tell you, not a lot of companies would be here if it weren't for this exceptional workforce.
I've been hearing that for as long as I've been working. And you mentioned Schneider Electric. I think they're a great example. Their growth in our region has surpassed anyone's expectations. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Their main focus has been how great our workforce is, how reliable they are. It gives them the reason to invest and continue to invest in our region.
Meta, same thing. We weren't even competitive, Richard, when we started. One of the executives raised his hand and said, this was your competition. This was El Paso. And we kept coming here. We kept coming here. They had to tell their executives who we were because they said, oh, come on. If you guys want to take a shot at El Paso, go ahead, but it ain't going to work. It's just not the right place. And by being here, talking to people, the way we treated them, the way we engaged them, and always say this, you don't want to just bring a company, Richard, and not be here to help them be successful. And we can't just step away and say, okay, Schneider, see you later. I've gone to Paso del Norte, I talked to the employees, I've talked to different employees at different companies to talk about, you know, we need to move forward, but you need to know that you're not just drilling something or, you know, an operation. You got to connect to the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is El Paso is positioned the best it's ever been positioned, and we got to move it forward.
That's really good to hear. And by the way, the city and I think the county too are starting to pay attention to not only the recruitment side, obviously, but almost just as importantly is the retention of the companies that have come here.
Absolutely.
To make sure that you're communicating with them and you're hearing from them what they need in order to continue to prosper and grow in the region.
Yeah, infrastructure, they've called us back and said, hey, we're having trouble with the entrance or we're having – and we got to be that kind of community that says, man, we got to fix that problem because we brought them in here.
So you have a lot to cover.
We do.
Your staff gave us a laundry list of things. So why don't we just jump right in to some of the key things that people ask about all the time. Ask me. I know they ask you.
Yes,
and
every day.
Top of the list were certificates of obligation. So mm-hmm. Why don't we just kind of get into that area now and cover it.
I think it's important because, you know, certificate of obligation allows myself and the court to vote for something that is not, you know, that we don't take to the voter. When you have your GOs, and that's when you go to the voter and say, hey, we're trying to accomplish this. There's a lot of things that we, you know, you
GOs have are general obligation.
General
bonds.
Obligation bonds. And, you know, there's sort of on the COs, there's got to be a trust factor. You elected us to make decisions on the spot sometimes because I'll tell you what, when you go to a GO, it might take a year and a half plus the expense of the voting. And by the time something that – let's say we're asking for $50,000, by the time we actually end up constructing it, it might be 30-40% because of inflation, because of all the factors, the supply chain demands. Things change. And so sometimes like the essential things, like now the certificate of obligation, and I need to clarify that it's a debt that we've worked on and we've structured in order not to increase taxes. So it takes a lot of work. We have to be, you know, really fiscally responsible to be able to get to a point to be able to use money and not increase taxes. And that's not – so it's not an easy task. Go, hey, you know what? I've just decided to do a certificate of obligation. You have to look at your credit ratings. You have to look at lowering your debt to be able to do that. And if you notice, the certificate of obligations have a lot to do with essentials, that if you don't fix them – they're going to be 3-4 times more expensive. And there's nothing – I mean, when you talk about, you know, and it's hard to believe, you know, here we are in, you know, in 2025, and there's people who have never received water and don't have sewerage and don't have and I'll relate it back to economic development, Richard, that companies look at that. They don't want to go into the county thinking that they're not going to have infrastructure, that the employees that are going to come from that area don't have water, don't have sewerage, don't have – so it's all ties in. It's not a simple task. You said economic development is over here and infrastructure is over here.
They're all related.
They all come together.
That's a really great point that you're raising. So you talked a little bit about COs and GOs, but there are some other things that you really wanted to talk about. And we'll go right to the capital improvement bonds and efforts that you're pursuing as a county. I think the audience wants to hear about it.
I mean, I have to thank the the voters for this. I mean, passing 3 out of 5 bonds And obviously, there's some that we really wanted to. For example, you know, the fixing of the courthouse, being more accessible, having more, having other places around the county that you don't have to come downtown. So those are things that, you know, it hurt a little bit, but we understand. The Coliseum, I know that people saw it more like, wait a minute, you need to fix your essentials and you're trying to fix the Coliseum. And so we understand that, although it came pretty close.
It did. I think there, just speaking as a citizen, there's still, at the time that the vote occurred, there are still, at least from my mindset, a lot of concern to understand what might happen. Will there ever be an arena, or whatever they want to call it, a multi-purpose venue? And if that were the case, why are we doing things with the Coliseum? So I think the confusion of what's going to happen in the future probably contributed to its downfall at that point in time. But hopefully we'll get some clarity over the next year or two and we can stop talking about it.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important because people don't realize that there's a place for the Coliseum that will never be taken by an arena. Paquita del Barrio is not going to go to the Civic Center. It's not going to go there. We're trying to bring up boxing. Boxing was such an incredible sport. Juarez, everybody got very involved in boxing. So we're working with the Coliseum. We're having more contact sports coming in. We had Stephanie Hahn, you know, winning the championship.
Yeah, incredible.
Isn't that amazing? And so it has its place. It has its lane that's very different. And it's a rite of passage for a lot of – I can't tell you, Richard, how many bands came here that are now famous that were not famous and nobody would have taken them up. Peso Pluma, all of these that came through here. Now, most people probably know this. You and I know this. We had Elvis Presley. We had Frank Sinatra. We had Willie Nelson. We had all of these. So the young people see the Coliseum as a rite of passage. They want to go through there. Peso Pluma would never come back to El Paso even. They would. We have several that came through there, made it. People loved them. Went on their tours. That now they're very unlikely to come to El Paso because we don't have the arenas and the capacity. So it is. It has its little historical kind of essence.
Yeah. I think you raise a good point there. I mean, if folks, and I speak for myself as well, I can't count how many really large concerts our family went to over the years at the Sun Bowl, because it's such a large venue, right? And then, or the Don Haskins, which is about 12,000 seats. But many, many events that we went to over the years still go to at the Coliseum because it's that unique venue that fills a niche.
Yeah, it's a niche. That's what I was looking for. I saw James Brown 10 times at the Coliseum.
10 times?
Yes, it was like, that was the thing for the Barrio High Schools. When James Brown showed up, we were all going to be there. I don't care what was going to happen. But and the Popular, for example, my dad worked 45 years, and that's where they had their Christmas party. And that's where they have their festivals and recognition for employees. And so there's this strong connection that people see with the Coliseum, just like with the Popular.
There's a niche that you have, that we as a community have, for folks who, for whatever reasons, culturally, may not want to go to the Convention Center, may not want to go to the Haskins Center or the Sun Bowl for these kinds of entertainment events, but going to the Coliseum just makes common sense. I mean, I can't even count how many times I've been to the rodeo there.
Yes.
Right? And that's a unique event you couldn't host at any other venue in our community. Really, realistically, you couldn't.
And a lot of community things happen. We did the pandemic, all the vaccines. We're doing almost 5,000 vaccines. They're able to drive in to people that couldn't get off their cars. The staff at the Coliseum are dedicated. We do the veterans. We did the Veterans Cup of the USA. It's kickoff 3 years there, and I know you were. And so our relationship, almost 300 National Guards that left and their families were there that left to defend our, you know, who we are. We have the naturalization takes place there. Sometimes even as many as 1,500 are naturalized there at the Coliseum. So it's got a community kind of component to it, and then the concert component to it.
And so I guess I would offer a thought that maybe you don't feel comfortable offering to our audience, which is at some point in time and hopefully near future, we will find a way to make the investment
Absolutely.
Into the Coliseum, because even if we build a multicultural venue, an arena, whatever they want to call it, an MPC, right, the multipurpose mm-hmm. facility, there will always be a need really for the Coliseum. Mm. And we just need to make sure that we embrace that and improve upon it rather than allowing it to deteriorate.
I'm actually having the state of the county, and one of the things that I don't like about the state of is that a lot of people can't afford it, and so we get sort of the same people. I want people from the veterans, I want people to be able to go to a place that they're not very likely to go, because who are you trying to communicate to, the same people, or are you trying to communicate the state of the county to an individual that maybe never had that opportunity? So we have that flexibility for the cost and the things that we need to do there.
So you're going to have the state of the county.
The state of the county.
At the Coliseum.
At the Coliseum.
I think that's never been done before.
We did it once.
Really?
We did it once and got a little bit of pushback. Why not the city? If I said county judge, county Coliseum. There's a connection there.
There's a connection there.
So I want to do that again.
This always happens, and particularly if I have you on as a guest. We run out of time before we run out of conversation. And so I apologize to our audience for that. We'll be happy to bring you back later.
Oh, I would love that.
We'll talk about more things that are critical to the county and to you individually. But maybe a closing thought very quickly, Judge, to our audience before we sign off.
One of the things that I'm really pushing hard on is that government is going to change more and more. As you see, it's going to be run more by the state and things taken away from local. And so I feel like the new government, for example, myself, will need to motivate the community to do a lot of things for themselves. Go to CEOs and say, take care of your employees. Carve out, for example, that happened in the pandemic. I went to Kelly from the electric company. I went to Dr. Heather Wilson, and I said, you vaccinate. You give them the mask. Carve out. And they were able to carve out almost 45,000 people that the government didn't have to feel that burden. So I think you're going to see more a shift towards the private sector being more involved in taking care of their own employees, making sure that it takes some of the burden away from and our role is going to be really to coordinate information, resources, so that others can take that burden. 54% of everything that we have to deal with are unfunded mandates. And so we can't continue to carry that without figuring a way how to do this.
And for those of you who don't know what an unfunded mandate is, it means the government tells you you have to do this, but they won't give you the money to do the work.
The money to do it. A lot of the things happening in the jail were unfunded mandates.
Yeah.
The state doesn't pay 1 cent for the inmates in the jail. That's a perfect example of a.
Thank you for taking the time to be on this show with us. To our audience, for those of you who may have tuned in a few minutes late, we're interviewing our county judge for the County of El Paso, Ricardo Samaniego, and we hope that you have a wonderful Saturday afternoon. But before we leave, we want to remind you, you're listening to KTEP. This is your public media station where you get accurate information provided to you that's not slanted. Thank you for listening. We hope, if you're not already a member, that you'll join by going to our website at ktep.org and clicking on the donate button. Support our public media station in El Paso. Have a great Saturday.
El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. The show is recorded at the Communication Department at the University of Texas at El Paso.